This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650 with Marcus Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Turn me up a little bit. Just what's been on my mind.
What's up? How you doing? Basketball Central on a Thursday night. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on Sportsnet 650. You could be anywhere in the world, but you're here with me, and I appreciate that. As always, if you missed anything on this show over the last little bit, you can find us on the website, sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central tab. Anything that you have missed, it is there. Old interviews, old takes, whether or not you agree with them, and usually you don't, and that's great, but they're there. You can check them out, sportsnet.ca/650. Another good show on tap for you. Ben Dowsett of Forbes Sports is going to join us in a little bit. We'll talk the Utah Jazz, who were in New York last night to play the Knicks, and there's been a lot of noise about the Knicks, and not on the floor. Same old Knicks in a way, right? Ownership, James Dolan. How often have we talked about that? They wanted Masai Ujiri. They couldn't get Masai Ujiri. Instead, they got Leon Rose, an ex-player agent. They won the first game with Leon Rose in attendance over Houston a few days ago, and even then, they couldn't get through that without a PR explosion, because now their biggest fan, their biggest supporter for years, both financially and otherwise, Spike Lee, is no longer coming to games at the Garden, at least until James Dolan sells the team, and he's probably not going to do that. The Knicks are still the Knicks. We're also going to talk Zion Williamson, Luka Doncic, and Steph Curry is back. Now, as you know, we tape this show in the afternoon. Steph Curry is back tonight against the Raptors in San Francisco. It's the first time that the Raptors and the Warriors meet since the NBA Finals, and we wonder what it's going to be like with Steph back in the fold in Golden State when you consider that his buddies aren't there. Klay Thompson's not there. Kevin Durant is not there. Draymond Green might be a little energized, I think, maybe, to have Steph back, but it's Andrew Wiggins and a bunch of cast-offs, a bunch of guys you've never heard. Steve Kerr has said that Steph wants to play basketball. He loves the game. He wants to play. We're not going to keep him out. We're not going to tank. We're not going to tank. So it's great that Steph is back. We'll get into that and what that means. But we'll start with the New York Knicks. And when you think about bad franchises in sports, what is the common denominator? Franchises that can just never seem to figure it out. They never seem to win anything. Every year at the draft, they always screw up. They always screw up their draft capital leading up to the draft, right? They'll pick someone that's immediately a bust. Like, what comes to mind when you think about a bad franchise in sports? You think of the New York Jets, right? You think of the New York Jets. You think of, you know, and we'll bring Michael Jordan into this, the Charlotte Hornets. Teams that just aren't going to go anywhere, ever, for any reason. Even in the NHL, you got franchises, even down in Florida, the Panthers, the Coyotes. Is anything ever going to get off the ground? What is the common thread? Well, the common thread is ownership. It starts from the top, and nothing is messier in the NBA right now than the situation with the New York Knicks. And the fascinating thing with this is, it was supposed to be a good week for the Knicks, because they had finally named a new president to the team. Leon Rose, an ex-player agent, had some big names in his employ for a long time, so that's a good pick. And this is after James Dolan had been making very public advances towards Masai Ujiri over the last few years. Everyone thought, well, Masai is going to leave Toronto. He's going to go to New York and expand his portfolio and also kind of run the Knicks in his spare time. That was the thought. And then it didn't happen, because James Dolan is a man who doesn't wait. He doesn't show patience, obviously. Leon Rose is the guy, and again, this should have been great news for the Knicks, right? Should have been great news. Should have gotten the fans into it. And you know what? For like half a night, it was. Because the Knicks actually won the game that Leon Rose attended, the first game that he attended as team president. They beat the Houston Rockets. They beat a Rockets team that had won six in a row. And not only did they beat the Rockets, it wasn't an accident. They played harder than Houston that night. And you thought, okay, great. But in the background of all that, during that game, the New York Knicks somehow managed to alienate their biggest fan, their highest profile fan, their most vociferous fan, and one of their biggest contributors, money-wise, in Spike Lee. We are now at a point where Spike Lee will no longer attend Knicks games at the Garden, at least for this year. And the Knicks have done this before. Charles Oakley was forced out of the Garden once. Right? Hauled off by security, on TV, on camera, was caught. He was being hauled down the tunnel. Knicks legend Charles Oakley. That was all James Dolan. You know why? Because Charles Oakley was critical of James Dolan, and Dolan said, I don't like that. Get this guy out of here. James Dolan has been caught on camera phones telling people not to come to the games when people say to him, hey, Dolan, sell the team. People were chanting, sell the team at the Garden last night. With Spike, of course, not in attendance. Now, if you've missed this, Marcus, how come Spike Lee's not coming to Knicks games anymore? I don't know much about the NBA. I don't know much about the New York Knicks in the last 20 years. They haven't done much, only one playoff series win. But I know who Spike Lee is. He won an Oscar, and he sits courtside at Knicks games. Pays for his seats, as we found out. He's paid something like, what, $9 million over the last 28 years to go to those games? Spike showed up for the game the other night against the Houston Rockets and apparently walked through a employee entrance at Madison Square Garden, had his ticket scanned to go into the building, something he has done for years. It was after he had had his ticket scanned and walked into the building that he was pulled back by security and said, you know, Spike, we need you to go outside and around the corner to the VIP entrance. And Spike Lee says, well, I don't know nothing about this. I've been using this door for 28 years. What are you going to do about it? James Dolan apparently went up to Spike Lee and said, hey, we got to talk. This is the owner of the Knicks going to the most high-profile fan of his franchise. 4 years, by the way. It's not like Spike just showed up. He's not Drake, okay? He's not Drake. It's not like he's been there the last 5 years. Spike has been there for 28 years. He's seen some good years in the 90s, and he's seen a lot of bad basketball over the last 20. What did I just say a couple of minutes ago? How many playoff series have the Knicks won in 20 years? They've won one. One playoff series victory in 20 years in the biggest media market in the United States. Still a glamour franchise. If you just take the brand, the New York Knicks, it's supposed to mean something, but it doesn't. And Spike Lee has been there through all of it. He's been there at the NBA draft every year in full Knicks regalia, cheering whatever mysterious European the Knicks pick with the fifth overall selection, because that's generally what happens when the Knicks get to the draft. Spike is their guy, and James Dolan, the owner, had to have a conversation with Spike, and Spike went on First Take ESPN a couple of days ago when they asked him, hey, what did Mr. Dolan say to you?
What did he say to you exactly, and what was your response exactly?
He said, we have to talk. I said, talk about what? I said, Mr. Dolan, I've been coming here for 28 years. When is something like it? Why did not anybody, why I was not notified by email? Text,
what'd he say?
Phone, he says, now you know.
Let me ask you.
Now you know it's too late.
Spike, why do you think that you, a top-paying customer and the most famous, you know, fan of the Knicks, this doesn't happen to Jack Nicholson at Staples, right?
With no.
16-time champion.
Doesn't happen to Drake. Down the line. Jimmy Buffett, Miami, nowhere.
So why do you think
you gotta
they
target? You got to ask Mr. Dolan.
Why do you?
You got to ask him.
You don't have any theory about why they target the number one fan who pays for his courtside tickets for now a quarter
century plus? And nothing like
plus?
To say, I never asked for any celebrity extra. Mm-hmm. I come there. I don't try to get on the Jumbotron. Mm-hmm. I just come there to enjoy myself.
So there you go. Spike saying, hey, I'm just a regular fan. And I've also been using this entrance at the Garden for 28 years. And of all the problems going on with the Knicks right now, and of all the things they're trying to reset, they just want to rebuild semi-quietly in New York and just reset. That's all they want to do. That's all they want to do. Clear cap space so no free agents will sign there, right? They wanted KD. They wanted Kyrie. Didn't get any of them. 10 years ago, they wanted LeBron James. They ended up with Amari Stoudemire, and they couldn't even insure his contract because his knees were so bad. 2 years ago, they traded Kristaps Porzingis because he wanted out of there, right? They just want to keep being the Knicks. And you're going to go after a guy who's paid you a bajillion dollars to sit courtside for 28 years and watch 20 years of bad basketball, and you're going to alienate that guy, James Dolan? You're going to alienate him? I know that Spike sounds like a bit of a martyr here. I get it, because Spike is a high-powered Hollywood director, one of the best of our time. He's offered up some of the best films of our time, some of the best films that make you think. Spike has done that, so he does sound like a little bit of a martyr here. Like, he's got a pretty good life. He's not, you know, some bum like me who got jacked around when I went down to the arena, right? A little bit of a martyr there. I'll give him that. But even still, you're going to go after Spike? Why would you go after him? You're trying to avoid PR blunders. And this is what bad teams do. This is what bad teams do. What is the common thread? What is the common thread? The common thread is ownership. And when you've got fans chanting at you, sell the team every night, how do you come back from that, aside from actually selling the team? 20 years of bad basketball since James Dolan took over. And now through 20 years, you're going to try to punt out Spike Lee to the point where Spike's going to hold himself out? It all comes back to the top, doesn't it? And by the way, when I was listing off organizations with questionable ownership and sport, I can't believe I didn't say the Ottawa Senators first. Shouldn't that be the case? Eugene Melnyk, Jim Little, right? Just yesterday, Little had been on the job 54 days. They get into one argument about team credit cards and tipping in restaurants. Eugene Melnyk, apparently the franchise rule was you can only tip 8% using a company credit card at a restaurant for a dinner. Jim Little tipped like 11% or something like that. They got into a fight over the phone. Jim Little cursed at his boss, so he got fired because Eugene Melnyk is a cheapskate. Bad ownership, guys. If you've got bad ownership, you cannot win. Maybe it goes hand in hand sometimes. I'm sure if Robert Kraft didn't have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, who knows what we'd be saying about Robert Kraft. And Robert Kraft has made enough headlines on his own over the last year and a bit. But either way, when you've got a bad team and you wonder why, I mean, look, the Knicks are in a situation where they've had seven head coaches and five team presidents in a span of 10 years. That is staggering. But here's one good thing I'll say about James Dolan. He's not afraid to spend money. He's not a cheapskate. He's not Donald Sterling. Not like Donald Sterling was with the Clippers. When anything that Donald Sterling wanted, well, you couldn't have it because it cost money. That was Donald Sterling. James Dolan's not afraid to throw money around, and that's fine. That's fine. But when you go 20 years in a market like New York and you only win one playoff series and you have a revolving door of head coaches and team presidents and look, Phil Jackson is still in Montana, I believe, collecting a little bit of money from the Knicks. They gave him $60 million to fix the team. Yeah, it's Phil Jackson, but he'd never been in a front office position before. Phil Jackson wanted to run that organization 72 hours a week. He just wanted to put his feet up in Montana. As I've said before, if you want security, if you want financial security, secure a long-term deal from either James Dolan or Dan Gilbert. That's another owner, by the way, who, if you want to track back to a team struggling, you got to go up top. And if LeBron James was not born in Akron, Ohio, we wouldn't even be talking about Dan Gilbert. That's another guy, too. James Dolan will spend money, but you got to be able to use it properly. And he never has. He never has. And he never will. It's been 20 years. It's not going to get better. Players don't want to go there. Two max slots this past summer. KD, Kyrie, come on in. Nah, we'll just go across the bridge to Brooklyn instead. We'll just rub it right in your face. So your fan base, if they want to see us in a year's time, they just go across the Brooklyn Bridge. That's it. Imagine that. 20 years of this, and it's not going to get better. He has to sell the team, and he won't do it. He said publicly he will not sell the team, which from a business standpoint, I understand. But if you're not successful and everyone hates you and everyone hates your product, why wouldn't you try to get out? Cash in. The Knicks are still a valuable commodity. One of the most expensive franchises in sports, at least in terms of value. You get a great deal on it. Still get the Garden. You still get New York. You still get the vibe, the scene. Celebrities still go to Knick games. They don't necessarily go to be seen. They're just there. That's ingrained. Basketball's a big deal in New York. The Knicks are a big deal in New York. And the NBA is better off when that franchise is relevant. And James Dolan is not going to lead them there, clearly. And now you go out and alienate your number one fan. So we can all point and laugh and think about this situation and go, well, I'm glad he doesn't own my favorite team. Man, oh man. So we'll talk about the Knicks again a little later on. They were playing the Jazz last night at the Garden, the first game of the post-Spike era, or at least during the Spike walkout era. Ben writes about the Utah Jazz, covers the NBA in general as well for Forbes Sports. He's been on this show before, so we'll get into that. We'll also talk about Zion Williamson and Luka Doncic. Those two met last night in Dallas, and that game didn't disappoint. Went to overtime. Dallas eventually pulled it out late in the extra frame, even though New Orleans hit a late three to send it into overtime. Finished well, but it really got me thinking about Zion Williamson, and I've been kind of dismissive of Zion while he was hurt on this show. I was wondering if he was going to live up to the hype, if he was going to pan out in the way that some players have after injuries in their first years. Because when Zion was sat down, my immediate thought was, well, hopefully he comes back and he's Blake Griffin, or hopefully he comes back and he's Ben Simmons. Hopefully he comes back and he's Joel Embiid. Zion Williamson has come back. He's been a 6 foot five and a half Shaquille O'Neal, a young 6 foot five and a half Shaquille O'Neal, the Orlando Shaq. That's what we've got right now with Zion Williamson. He just keeps getting better. You wait for him to have a bad game and he won't do it. You look at his game by game splits. I mean, last night in Dallas, yeah, he only had 21 points, but he's still 50% from the floor in just 35 minutes. They lost by four in overtime. Okay, they're in a playoff chase right now, all right. But he's reached a point where, yeah, he could overtake Ja Morant for Rookie of the Year. I didn't think it was possible. I didn't think it was possible. He's gone toe-to-toe with LeBron James twice in the span of about 6 days here. Had 35 the other night against the Lakers. Kid's not afraid of anything. Goes 12 for 16 in that game against L.A., 75% from the floor. He's a good free throw shooter, too, for the most part. At least he was that night at the line, and he was getting to the line at will in those two games against the Lakers. 11 of 13 in the game on Sunday, 13 of 19 in the game back on February the 25th. And watching some spurts from Zion last night in Dallas, he has already figured out in the NBA, in a league of men, he's at 19 years old, he's already figured out that when he gets the ball, he knows, okay, I'm going to get the ball, I'm going to take you down here to this spot, and I'm either going to score on you or you're going to foul me. He has that ability in year one. And I find that more and more young players, when they come into the league, they're more ready to approach that. It's not like it was 20 years ago when you drafted a kid high and maybe he was a generational talent or lightning in a bottle, what have you. Maybe he was a guy like that. Like Tim Duncan was like that. Not everybody's going to be like Tim Duncan. But now, more and more, guys are just ready when they come into the NBA. Guys are ready. There's a reason that the college game has been hurting for years, not just with the one-and-done rule. It's the fact that these kids are really talented. It's talent. It's got nothing to do with anything they're doing at the college level. These college coaches, the good ones anyway, John Calipari, Mike Krzyzewski, they tell these kids, no, you're too good. You got to go to the NBA. Go get paid now. And I say that with March Madness coming up, starts in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks tonight, I believe. March 19th, I think, is when it all gets going. And we'll all sit down and we'll all watch March Madness and we'll watch the tournament and we'll watch the games and we'll think, man, it's nowhere close to the NBA in terms of quality. Because all the good guys who would be sticking around all 4 years back in the 80s, they're in the league now. We were excited a year ago watching Zion Williamson at Duke with R.J. Barrett, with Cam Reddish, right? Now a year later, these guys are in the league and performing. And like I said, Zion has reached a point in his career where he's played, what, 18 games? He knows where he wants to go on the floor. He knows how to get to his spots on the floor. And like I said, when he gets you one-on-one from about 18 feet out, he has the ability to size guys up and go, I'm going to take you down to this spot right here, and you're going to foul me, or I'm scoring. And if you play soft, I'm going to dunk you into middle earth. He's already figured this out after 18 games. 27 a game this month. Again, three games, right? Small sample size. But in the month of February, you look at these totals, 24 against the Cavs, 29 against the Lakers, 28 against Golden State, 25 against Portland, 32 against Oklahoma, 31 against Portland, against Chicago, 21, 20 against Milwaukee and Giannis, against Houston, 21, 26 points a game in the month of February, or pardon me, this is the month of March, 26 points a game in the month of March, and then 27. No, wait, hold on. No, I'm all sideways here. 27 a game in March and 26 in February. There we go. See, I got it right. Right? 27 in March, 26 in February. And then when he came back in January, a handful of games, still just kind of figuring it out, still kind of, you know, retracing himself, almost learning how to play basketball again because he hadn't played since the preseason. 19 a game in five games. That first game against San Antonio, we all saw it. We all checked it out. Remember how entertaining that was when he hit those threes late in the game. When he caught fire after that rough start, we thought, oh, boy, Zion, he's crumbling. No, he didn't. This kid is good, and he's going to be good for a long time. And that Pelicans team is going to be good for a long time as well because they have a decision to make on Brandon Ingram. Ingram's had a great year, an all-star, a candidate for most improved, depending on how you look at it, scoring in the high 20s, getting to his spots, getting the shots that he wants. Saw that last night against Dallas, hit a big shot along the baseline to help send the game to overtime. Really coming into his own after being traded for Anthony Davis. I don't think Brandon Ingram would have worked out alongside LeBron James because Brandon Ingram needs the basketball. And what makes Zion Williamson so unique is that he doesn't need it. He gets all his offense within the flow. That is special. That's the sign of a special player. We saw that from LeBron James back in 2003, 04, 05. Yeah, LeBron scores a lot of points, but it's all within the flow. It's not like Kobe, where Kobe will go out of his way to shoot 35 times and disrupt the flow of the offense. LeBron looked at the game differently, and so does Zion Williamson today. Especially in contrast with Luka Doncic, another guy who can do that. Get everything within the context, for the most part. Sometimes Luka will play hero ball. Sometimes Luka will put the game on his shoulders, and that's great. You want that from your star. You want that from your primary playmaker. You want that. Of course you do. And that's a sign of where we're at in the league right now, because there's a sea change coming. LeBron James is 35 years old. Dwayne Wade is retired. There's guys in the league that we've come to know who are now gone. And we're looking not just to the next face, but to the next generation, really. Giannis is going to be there for a time to come. Kawhi Leonard's still going to kick around. Kawhi's probably got 3 or 4 good years left in him. Anthony Davis is only 26. And then after that, you kind of get into that next echelon. The Zion Williamsons, the Ja Morants, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in Oklahoma City. The Thunder continue to be a playoff threat in the Western Conference, right in the middle there. I think they're 6th at the time we're taping this. Donovan Mitchell, young guys, Ben Simmons. The NBA is in the midst of a talent boom, the likes of which we haven't seen since probably the 03 draft. The James Wade Bosh year. That's where we're at right now in the NBA, and it's a great time for the league. Because, yeah, you've still got 35-year-old LeBron James, and yes, it's great that Stephen Curry is back tonight with the Warriors. It's funny, we kind of forgot about Steph, didn't we? Steph gets hurt early in the season, and the Warriors basically just throw a bunch of replacement players out there. We kind of forgot about him. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun to watch him again. Different context, of course. He won't have Klay around. He won't have Kevin Durant around, so the spacing is not going to be as advantageous. It's going to be a little like the NBA Finals last year against the Raptors when Nick Nurse went to the box and won. Steph had to shoot 45 times to score 50 points, but he was going to do it. I think we miss him a little bit. And Damian Lillard has kind of taken a bit of that point guard shine from Steph Curry to the point that earlier in the year we were thinking, hey, if you replace Steph Curry with Dame Lillard, do those same Warrior teams have the same amount of success? If you took this version of Damian Lillard and you put him on the Warriors teams of the last few years with Klay, with Durant, with Draymond, do the Warriors have the same level of success? They probably do. We're close to it. Dame is just as skilled as Steph, but I feel like we've forgotten what Steph Curry is and what he can be. And it's going to be fascinating, especially that the Warriors are integrating him into a tough situation. Steph loves the game he wants to play, but it's Andrew Wiggins, sometimes Draymond Green, and a bunch of guys you've never heard of. Is Steph going to go supernova? I hope he does for purely an entertainment standpoint. I sure hope he does. I hope he scores 35-40 a night just so we can remember. Just so we can remember. The league has missed him. The league has missed Klay. The league has missed KD. Those guys are the stalwarts now. And then right behind them, you've got this next generation. Giannis is somewhere in the middle because he's still a young guy too. Don't forget. Anthony Davis is 26. Ja Morant, Zion Williamson, Luka Doncic. It is a hell of a time to be an NBA fan, to be a fan of basketball. This is a great time. And Zion and Luka showed it last night, particularly Zion Williamson. He knows his spots, he knows where he wants to go, and he knows what it's going to have to take to be that guy. You can see glimpses of it already. It's special. When we come back, we'll talk with Ben Dowsett of Forbes Sports, talk about the Jazz, who were in New York last night playing the Knicks, and it's a bit messy in New York. We'll get back into all that Spike Lee stuff and James Dolan, because drama's good. We like that here on Basketball Central. Back with more. You're on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends from an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has that too, and it's free.
It's free.
Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks.
Whether you want to get in on the football action,
tonight's baseball game, or anything in between, head over to Oddshark.net and start playing like a shark today. This is not a gambling site.
Basketball Central continues on Sportsnet 650 with your host, Marcus Fitzgerald.
Heat can win it with the last shot. Oh, Waiters just taking his time down to 5 seconds in the game. Waiters against Clay Thompson. Three for the win. Got it! Oh, Waiters! Back downtown! Hits a three ball! 1.6 seconds left to go! Do you believe it? Waiters, his sixth tray of the night!
Welcome back, Basketball Central, on a Thursday night. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on Sportsnet 650, sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central page. You can also find me on Twitter at Marcus Fitzy, MarcusFitzy. I care about you so much, I spell out the entire handle. You heard that clip there of Deion Waiters hitting that game-winning three against the Golden State Warriors a couple years back, because Deion is back in the NBA. Waiters Island has returned. And he's joined the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers finally get into the buyout market. They finally find a guy. And maybe they have found their playmaker. Maybe. That's what they've needed for about, four solid months. A guy not named LeBron James who could create offense, who has the potential to do so for the Lakers. Because as good as LeBron has been, and there's been a lot of chatter over the last week since the Sunday night game against New Orleans, that, hey, maybe LeBron James is entering the MVP conversation. He's in the conversation. But we know that it's Giannis' award. You'd have to be drunk not to vote for him, but that's the way these things go when we reach the point in the season where there's 6 weeks left and we got to drum up some interest. So what do? We turn around and we go, hey, LeBron James has had a great year. How come he hasn't gotten the recognition? How come we're not talking about this? Because on that game Sunday against New Orleans, Zion was a story, sure, but LeBron had a big night. 13 points in the fourth quarter, 34 in total. Lakers get the win on the road. They've been rolling since the All-Star break, right? So everybody's going to react that way. However, anybody who's watched the Lakers on a regular basis knows that they were always one playmaker short. They needed a guy who could create shots, a guy who could create his own shot, not just for others, but for himself as well, a guy who could break down a defense in the last 5 or 6 seconds of the shot clock. Now, I don't know how much Deion Waiters is actually going to give Los Angeles. It's difficult to say because he hasn't played very much at all this season, had that incident with edibles on the team plane, and then that was it. We didn't hear from Deion anymore. But consider this, Deion Waiters as a playmaker, you got to go back a little bit, and I realize I'm going back a bit far. 2017-18, okay? He was seventh in the league in drives per game. Not afraid to put the ball on the floor. Second in passes off of drives. Willing to kick out. A willing playmaker. And fifth in assists off of drives. So he has that ability. At least it was in there 3 years ago. And that is a very big caveat. If there's anything left in the tank there, it's still relatively better than this current version of Rondo or Avery Bradley, or Danny Green. Danny Green's a great defender and a good three-point shooter, but you know you don't want him putting the ball on the floor at any point. Saw that with the Raptors. It's the same with the Lakers. Great shooter, Danny, but don't put the ball on the floor. We don't need that. Rondo, once in a while, he'll have moments where you're like, I can't believe we slagged the guy. But you know what? Rondo's a bit long in the tooth now. He's not giving the Lakers what he should, and he's not giving the Lakers what Frank Vogel seems to think. Rondo still takes a lot of Alex Caruso's minutes. Avery Bradley can defend, but he's not the guy you would trust to get into the paint and set it up for Anthony Davis or set it up for Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee for an easy dunk or kick out for three. That's been the issue with the Lakers all season. It's been LeBron, AD, and a varied group of specialists, right? Specialists. They needed a guy who could just command the ball on offense, create for himself, and find an open shot for his teammates. Deion Waiters could be able to do that. Could be, right? But that's also a sign of how excited we get about the buyout market. Anytime a buyout market signing happens, everybody gets fired up. Oh, the contenders have thrown their hats in the ring. They've got their guys to round out the rosters, right? Marvin Williams goes to Milwaukee. Everybody gets fired up. Reggie Jackson has actually been pretty good with the Clippers to this point because he takes some of the offensive pressure off of Lou Williams. And now Deion Waiters to Los Angeles. And this is after the Lakers had already signed Markieff Morris a week ago. Markieff has been good in spots. Really, he's just another 6'7" body that can defend other 6'8" bodies on the perimeter. They needed that. So they filled that need. And then they released Troy Daniels, who really towards the end of his run was basically just a human victory cigar. He really played his way out of the rotation. He came there. He was supposed to be a three-point shooter, and he never really filled the rotation for Frank Vogel. So that made him expendable, and now you go Dion Waiters. Now, the thing with Waiters is the contract that he has, it's very similar to what Dwight Howard had when he showed up. It's basically, okay, if you mess around, we'll cut you. This is your last chance. And we've seen what Dwight Howard has done and how Dwight Howard has reinvented himself with this Lakers team to the point where the Lakers have fully guaranteed his contract for this year. So it's a very similar situation. You also know that Rob Pelinka and LeBron James and Anthony Davis have all done their due diligence on Dion Waiters because it came down to either Dion or J.R. Smith. J.R. is a little more erratic. We all love J.R., right? We all love J.R. Smith. We all do. Sometimes he can get hot. He can give you 30 points, but sometimes he'll leave you shaking your head. And J.R. has been out of the game for a couple of years, and even LeBron James, who's one of his closest allies, I bet even LeBron, and I can't speak for the inner workings of the Laker organization. Like, I'm not there, but I would have to guess. I would venture an educated guess that even LeBron James is like, look, JR is my guy, but I don't know if he can help us right now. He could have done so 5 years ago, but not now. Whereas Dion Waiters is a little less removed from the game and maybe just a little more in terms of playmaking. J.R. Smith off a screen, if you want him to shoot a three from the elbow extended, great. Anything else? Eh. Specialist, right? They've already got specialists on that roster. They need a guy who's a little more well-rounded, and I know because it's a buyout market, the pickings are slim, but Dion Waiters might be able to help. And tomorrow night, they face the Milwaukee Bucks in Los Angeles at 7:30, by the way. Very excited for that one. Hopefully we'll see Dion in uniform. Is he going to be out there? How many minutes is he going to play? Because think about it. If he's taking the roster spot of Troy Daniels, who, as I said, basically a human victory cigar, how much is he going to see of the floor? And then if he's on the floor, does he take Rondo's minutes, which he should, or does he eat into the minutes of Alex Caruso, which would cause a riot in Los Angeles? So Frank Vogel does have some decisions to make with that rotation. With that in mind, joining us now, he writes for Forbes Sports, also covers the Utah Jazz quite extensively, always has thoughts about the Jazz on Twitter. He's been on the show once before. He is Ben Dowsett of Forbes Sports. Ben, thanks so much for doing this. Simply put, can we expect Dion Waiters to be a real, actual factor with the Los Angeles Lakers?
Probably not. And I don't mean that as any kind of an insult to Dion Waiters, who I'm actually kind of a fan of, always been a bit of a fan of, even though he's, a very polarizing player, obviously. The simple reality is just that it's pretty rare for a buyout guy to ever really have a major impact on a playoff race, on a championship run. You can point to instances where, a guy's done something here or there, which could absolutely be the case with Dion Waiters. He's the ultimate heat check guy. Maybe he comes in and wins you a quarter in a playoff game or something, and that ends up going down as an important moment later on. But from a broad standpoint, and especially as you move through the rest of the season, the Lakers already have a pretty strong, like, if Dion Waiters playing in front of Alex Caruso, for instance, because in that case, I don't know if I like it that much. I like Alex Caruso. I'd rather he plays. So from that standpoint, I don't even know if Waiters is a guarantee to, like, jump straight into the rotation and play lots of minutes. So with that being said, I don't think he makes a gigantic impact, but hey, you never know.
Well, I'm with you on that, and I'm with you with everyone else in that I like Alex Caruso, of course. And you know that Waiters is basically replacing Troy Daniels, who was more or less a human victory cigar over the last few weeks. The Lakers have done a great job with Dwight Howard, basically telling him, okay, you've got your last chance here. We need you to play this role. Can we expect the same from Dion? Can we expect him to buy in the same way that that Dwight has throughout the course of this season?
Yeah, that's one thing that I think we have seen a pretty strong track record, and I don't want to put this down only to LeBron, because I do want to credit the Lakers organization. Frank Vogel, his coaching staff, as you mentioned, they've done an excellent job with Dwight Howard. But we have seen several times over the last few years now, as far as LeBron's title teams, they definitely have, some mercenaries, some of your veterans, and they've had, J.R. Smith with Cleveland. They've had plenty of these examples of guys who you wonder, is this going to be a guy that can get his head screwed on straight and, be the right type of personality, et cetera. And for the most part, that's been successful under LeBron, who it seems has enough of a cachet and a power as a leader that he takes some of those worst tendencies maybe out of these guys, helps them fall in line, whatever's going on. I can't speak from personal experience, but it seems like the track record of that is pretty strong. I don't know if Deion's going to be fantastic on the court, as we talked about in the last answer, but from a personality standpoint, I hope at least, and would, based on LeBron and the team's track record, would think that that would work out well.
And you would expect that they've done their due diligence as well. But here's the thing, Ben. I mean, we're talking about Deion Waiters right off the top here. We seem to get so caught up in this buyout market noise every season. I mean, we can talk about the 2008 Celtics. P.J. Brown was a key part of that championship team. But going back through the years, this is something that we get so fired up about, and yet it's not something that really plays out the way we think it would once we get to the postseason. I mean, Reggie Jackson with the Clippers, maybe he takes some pressure off of Lou Williams, but why do we get so jacked up about buyout market every year? Because it seems like we do.
You're right, and I'm of two minds here, because, and I'm probably a hypocrite as I answer the question, because, okay, yeah, I completely agree with everything you just said. I pretty much said the same thing earlier. It's pretty rare. Like, we just don't see these guys impact playoff races that often. At the same time, marginal value is a real thing in the NBA, especially when you're, sometimes even more for non-title teams than it is for the title teams. If that makes any sense, the title teams are often defined by, like, hey, the Clippers have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. They are title contenders. Like, that's, they have two of the best 10 players in the league, including one of the three, and that's, like, that makes you a title contender. With teams around the margins, there can be a little bit more of, like, that kind of little incremental value does matter, and I do actually think the buyout system is kind of unfair and stupid, and I do think that there are some complaints to be had about it, but you're right, those complaints, like, making it as if those complaints are things that are altering the title landscape or completely changing the league or anything like that would be disingenuous, because that's not true. I do think there could be some tweaks to the system, particularly with the timing, but it's not like this is, killing a team's chances of winning or making another team, way better than they were before.
Ben Dowsett joining us on Basketball Central. Ben, the last time we spoke, you had a piece about how Russell Westbrook just wasn't quite fitting in with James Harden, but a lot has gone down since then. That was a few months ago. They've gone to micro ball now. What do you make of this Russ situation now that he's basically back to the old Westbrook, now that they've gone so small?
He might be even better than the old Westbrook, to be honest. And quite frankly, I have nothing but admiration for not only what he's done individually, but what that group of players and, frankly, what that front office and coaching staff have done in Houston. We'll see whether it works, whether they end up being able to carry it the whole way. But I think there's almost no question that the group they had with Clint Capella playing center, the way they were doing it, it had reached its ceiling. And it was a gamble to go with what a team has never done this before. They don't have anybody over 6'8 playing minutes. It's insane. It's one of the craziest things I've seen for a sport that has historically prioritized height to such a crazy degree. And it's really worked. It's solved. You mentioned the piece that I wrote a while back about Westbrook, which I'll defend at the time. I believe it was very accurate. Since the way that they've managed to solve those problems without actually changing Russell Westbrook himself, like, they've said, Russ, hey, keep being you. I mean, Russ is never going to do anything different, obviously. That's the Russell Westbrook code. The fact that they've been able to do that while with the same base player, but to change things up and to this degree, especially in today's NBA, it takes huevos, if I may say, and it's something I respect. And I whether it ends up working long-term or not, I think it was the right move for the Rockets, and I'm really impressed by it.
Well, that was my next point, too, because, I mean, the Rockets get rid of Clint Capella, and everybody fries them for about 3 or 4 days, and then they go out and beat the Lakers. And I think about it, and it's like, you know what? This is what Daryl Morey doubled down on. He doubled down on Russ and James Harden working out, and in order to do that, they had to go small. Now, one thing we know about Houston, Ben, is that Daryl Morey could be on his way out, and Mike D'Antoni could be on his way out, too, at the end of the year, because Tillman Fertitta, you never know what's going on there. Is this just a case of a team and a management group and a head coach just going down firing no matter what's going to happen?
Maybe to a degree, though. I've always, I've talked to Daryl a few times in the past. I've interviewed him for a couple stories. My firm belief with Daryl is that he would do this kind of stuff anyway, even if he wasn't potentially at the end of a contract, him obviously embroiled in a contentious situation regarding the China tweet that he sent and that whole situation. I think Daryl is the type of guy who has extremely strong convictions about the sorts of things he wants his team to be like in basketball. And I think he's willing to take big risks to make those convictions happen. We've seen that in recent seasons, even when he had multiple years left on the contract. Obviously, I can't speak to the inner workings in Houston, what's actually going on, whether he's truly on the hot seat. You mentioned Mike D'Antoni, whether he might be on the hot seat as well. I will say I have not been a very big fan of Tillman Fertitta as far as his public appearances and the things that he said. They're not They are not the kinds of things a good owner generally says. I'll just say that. But from a broad standpoint, I wouldn't view, especially on from Maury's perspective, I think he's a risk taker anyway, and he would have done this stuff regardless.
Well, the Rockets are firmly entrenched in that second tier in the Western Conference with the Utah Jazz, Ben, a team that you follow quite closely. Utah's a half game back of the Rockets for fourth. OKC and Dallas right on their tails for that five seed. Which direction is more likely for Utah here, Ben? Home court in round one, or do you think they open the postseason on the road?
I think that their most likely individual outcome is the same one that it's been for, I believe this would now be the fourth straight year, which is the fifth seed. That's where I think that's their most likely outcome if you look at most of the projection systems right now. Now, that's a couple games here or there could swing that. Denver had lost a really bad one to Golden State the other night. A couple more of those, and all of a sudden the Jazz could be in their neighborhood. Those two teams play twice more this season, so that's two more opportunities for the Jazz to gain a game. You could easily – I have a hard time seeing the Jazz catching either Houston or the Los Angeles Clippers, both of whom – I think Houston's schedule is roughly even, but I just think they're fantastic right now, and they aren't going to lose very much more. And then the Clippers have a really, really easy schedule, and they're coming together really well. Considering that they're both already ahead of the Jazz, and in Houston's case, Houston already holds the tiebreaker over the Jazz, I don't see the Jazz leapfrogging either of them. Denver's the one who, even though they're two games ahead of the Jazz and tiebreakers are pretty iffy, like it would be tough for the Jazz to win them, there's enough games left between the two teams, and Denver has a tough enough schedule. I could see them catching them and getting up to fourth, but barring something crazy, it feels like four is the ceiling to me. And, you know, frankly, the Jazz have won a few straight, but they haven't been amazing. They're still playing some relatively lackluster ball. If either OKC or Dallas behind them were to get hot, they could drop. But I think either four or five is most likely, with five being the easily the strongest possibility to me.
Well, when you look at this Utah roster, I mean, Mike Conley, Benny, missed a month between December and January, but his three-point percentage right now is up 43% for the month of February. Minutes are up around 30 a night. How much can you trust this version of Mike Conley going forward here for the final 6 weeks?
Yeah, you know what? I've been there for a little while now. It started out a bit bumpy. There were some clear fit and comfort issues as far as a guy who had been in another place for 13 years and was just really trying to figure out new surroundings, a new type of pick and roll where big man actually rolled instead of popping, which they had done for basically his whole career in Memphis. If you can go, and then he was injured for a little while, you can go back to pretty much as soon as he came back from that first injury. He had another real brief absence there for a while. He's been consistently good since that happened. The numbers have been a little wonky for the whole group in and out. Some people, like to blame Mike Conley for that. He's the new face, obviously, so that it can be easy to pin some of the struggles on that. And some of them have corresponded with when he's been in or out of the lineup. But I think that's more of a correlation doesn't equal causation thing. More of a they played good teams when he's been healthy and they had a really easy schedule when he wasn't, that sort of thing. With that in mind, I fully trust him. To me, the bigger question with the Jazz is the whole group, including him, the whole group's effort at perimeter defensive. I said that really badly for a radio guest, but their perimeter defense, which has been just atrocious, especially over the last couple of weeks, months. If they don't get that fixed, it's almost not going to matter how good Mike Conley or anyone else on the roster is, because their ceiling will be limited at that point.
Well, looking ahead to the postseason for Utah, and provided they're going to get there, and we both think that they are, certainly, who is the biggest irrational confidence guy on the team? Because we opened this talking about Dion Waiters. Is it Joe Ingles? Is it somebody else? Because any good playoff team always needs a guy like that. Is Ingles going to be the guy in that spot? Because he's been a bit up and down lately.
Well, I don't know about irrational confidence, but confidence is a big word when it comes to Joe Ingles. I actually wrote an article on Forbes yesterday about that, pretty much that exact topic. He's kind of down on it right now. It has not been working well for Joe Ingles recently. His last couple of weeks, and even longer than that, have been extremely rough. I think certainly him sort of rediscovering his spark is going to play a big role for the Jazz, both on both ends of the floor. He's been much more hesitant shooting the ball. That's something Jazz fans are familiar with from his early career here. It's something he had mostly gotten out of over the last couple of years, but it's kind of reoccurring a little bit. Defensively, he's one of several guys. I don't want to just highlight him. He's one of several guys who need to be better for the group. That said, to answer your question, I think the irrational confidence guy for me as they get into the Blazers too, and they're both newcomers as well, Bojan Bogdanović and Jordan Clarkson, one starting, one coming off the bench. Bojan in particular has recently, he's talked about how he needs to play better, and he's really simplified his game on offense. one of the best shooters in the league, full stop. He's just shooting a lot more. He's not over dribbling, not trying to get himself into traffic. He's just shooting the dang ball, and he's doing it really well. And Clarkson's been a huge lift for them since he came over from Cleveland back in late December. He's been their spark plug off the bench. He could probably stand to pass a little bit more, but given the need that the Jazz have for that kind of a player with their bench units, he's been really important, and he's going to play lots of minutes in the playoffs despite being sort of a six-man type.
We'll let you out on this one. The Jazz went to the Garden last night. It was the first game of Spike Lee's boycott, Ben. The Knicks continue to get crazier, and Spike poured a bit of gasoline on the fire over the course of the week. What's your take on all this? Is Spike being a bit of a martyr, or is it just James Dolan being James Dolan, and we have to wait till he sells the team?
You know, here's what I have to say. Maybe, I don't know the inner workings. I obviously, only those guys know, and the people who were there know what actually happened that night, and whether Spike Lee had actually been told previously about a door or whatever. I'm only hazy on the details, because to me the details are less important here than the overall point that, you know what, this misunderstandings happen all the time in daily life. It happens. You know, a famous person thinks that they, for whatever reason, thinks they could have done something they couldn't. Even if it's a non-famous person, I'm sure these incidents happen in NBA arenas all over the league on a daily, weekly basis. And you know what? We don't hear about them, because you don't need to, because it's not that big of a deal. If you're an organization like that that's got all sorts of money, you say, you know what? We apologize. You're one of our most loyal fans. Not a big deal. Let's give you something. Let's do something nice for you. Try and smooth things over. But no, not the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks are the only team that wants to put out a press release about this, make it into a national issue that leads all the talk shows. The reason that this is a big deal is because the New York Knicks chose to make it one. And until James Dolan is no longer the guy who's running the show, we can just expect that to continue happening with them. And it's pretty embarrassing for a franchise of their stature. And whether or not Spike Lee is over-exaggerating this, the fact that it has to be an issue at all is so very Knicks, and I don't think you'd be dealing with it with pretty much any other team in the league.
Thanks so much for doing this as always, Ben. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, that's Ben Dowsett with Forbes Sports. Also covers the Utah Jazz, and Utah facing the Boston Celtics tomorrow night. And the Celtics will be shorthanded. We're expecting that tomorrow to be without Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Can't believe I've done an entire show. I haven't talked about Jason Tatum and the run that he's been on. He's been fantastic after a down year in year two. He was an all-star this year, and you thought, oh, okay, well, Jason Tatum, you got to name somebody from the Celtics. He's shown that over the last couple weeks here on a hell of a run. Turns out Jason Tatum, yes, is a good basketball player. He is. We should give more love to Jason Tatum on the show, but we haven't gotten there yet because we're talking about the Knicks and James Dolan and Spike Lee. It's more fun. It's more spicy. Come back to the Garden, Spike. And you know what, Mr. Dolan, at the risk of you keeping me out of MSG if I ever went to New York, sell the team. Sell the team. I know you're willing to spend money, but it's done. 20 years, one playoff series victory. Move it along. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Ben Dowsett as well. It's Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650. We'll do it again next week. I am Marcus Fitzgerald. Take care. Talk to you soon.